This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. The Human Centipede. The only movie Roger Ebert ever refused to give a star rating to. It is what it is, he concluded. It was the talk of the festival circuit in 2009, the talk at dinner, not panel discussions. It was too cruel, too cracked. High school boys were emailing each other gross-out clips. Many reviewers wouldn't even recount the premise. I will, so feel free to skip ahead about 1 minute. The movie, the first of a trilogy, starts with the familiar horror trope of two pretty young women getting a flat tire at night, in the rain, in the woods.
I think we're supposed to turn.
I thought you knew exactly where we were going.
What was that?
They end up in the home of a demented surgeon.
Something to drink.
Then the familiar tropes end. Because Dr. Heider, once a, get this, respected separator of Siamese twins, has a late career goal. It's to kidnap three people, sever their knees, and sew their bodies together, mouth to anus, creating one long digestive system. It's a bleak movie, terrifying and bloody. Dieter Laser's suave Dr. Heider is Mengele-like in his dispassionate cruelty, and the victims play their roles with no wink or nod to break the tension. But shock wears off. The movie that Roger Ebert refused to review is now firmly a part of the American popular culture.
We have a long, treasured tradition here on our show, which celebrates the Festival of Lights. It's time once again for our annual lighting of the Human Centipede Menorah. Human Centipede Menorah!
The originator of the Human Centipede is improbably a charming Panama hat-wearing young Dutchman named Tom Six. He had just arrived from Amsterdam and brought with him his longtime business partner, who is also his sister, we think.
How do you pronounce your first name again?
Ilona.
Ilona. Yes. Okay. So we've all met before because I was in that unique club of people who watched your magnum opus and was just knocked out. I thought, my God, I've got to meet the guy that made this movie. Mm-hmm. And you were so cheery. You were like, you were so kind of animated and boyish in a way I was unprepared for. You were like Ronnie Howard. Hello, Alec, I am Tom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is my sister, Ilona. Yeah. And she was like, hello, Alec. Yeah, there was no black clothes and like spider webs in the corner.
The dangerous thing, eh?
Right. You said to me, you said, we are going to redefine evil, you said.
Exactly.
And I got a chill. I thought, man, if anybody's going to redefine evil, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
What is horror to you in film, in filmmaking?
To me, is when you're in a situation, you're attached to an asshole, you're in a situation where you can't leave, and it's worse than death. You want to die, but
you're
you
trapped.
Can't. Absolutely.
Where did you first get the idea?
It's very simple.
Was it your idea?
Yeah, definitely. I was watching television and there was a child molester on, and he did the most terrible things to children, and he got a very low sentence because of a mistake they made. And I was angry. And I said they should stitch his mouth to the anus of a fat truck driver.
Amazing.
Because that would be a great punishment.
So out of something good,
yeah,
out of a desire for justice,
absolutely,
emerged this twisted idea of your film trilogy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said this man should have his mouth sewn to the
anus of a fat
anus
truck driver on his hands and knees. Because that would be...
And sever his knee ligaments.
Absolutely.
So he can't run away.
Absolutely. And then I immediately, my then-girlfriend, I put her on her hands and knees, and I took a picture, and then I photoshopped her behind each other, and I thought, that's a great idea for a movie. This looks amazing, but at the same time, it's so incredibly horrifying, the idea that you have to
that
swallow.
That goes without saying. Well, I wouldn't say swallow. You're part of a chain, of a digestive chain that happens. Yeah. It's hideous. But in your movie, this is not an act of justice. We're not taking the child molester.
No. I did it in part three.
And sew him. Right. Your first film, well, there was no justice there.
And I thought I need one of those old villains as the Frankenstein doctor almost, who created.
Like a Peter Cushing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And can you imagine? He did over 70 films and the guy was never cast as a horror villain.
Never.
Never.
Well, what did he play?
All good guys. Isn't it great?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm really going to struggle to keep a straight face with you.
Yeah, no,
because I can't believe I'm finally meeting you in person after all our conversations. But so before you made this movie, before you saw this horrible child molester who was not meted out a proper sentence as far as you're concerned, what was your childhood like in terms of film going?
I already loved horror films. I went to the video stores and my parents let me rent all those horrible films.
What were
films.
Your favorite films?
Cujo from Stephen King, all those zombie films, everything. I swallowed it up.
Yeah.
And I have this really big imagination. Eh? So when I was a little kid, I said, I want to make films when I grow up.
And did?
Yeah, definitely.
Did you make films with a little camera when you were a kid?
Yeah, definitely.
Your parents got your camera.
My grandfather, he gave me a camera.
What was the first film you made?
It was a horror film. An alien came out of a guy's stomach.
Had you seen the movie Alien already?
Yeah, exactly.
So you were just kind of taking that, you're riffing on that.
Playing
the
with
John
it.
The John Hurt character.
Definitely.
So you had, describe to us if you can in the most simple terms, how those effects work. Did you have like a mannequin that you had?
Yeah, I built those puppets and the guy with the hand in it coming out. I built his body and all, of course, in a simple way. But it already worked.
And so what did he do for a living and how did he die? What was the setting? Was it a space station as well?
Yeah, something like that. I built my room into this giant studio.
Aluminum
stuff.
Foil all over
Absolutely.
The walls.
Yeah, very low budget.
No budget.
I was a small guy, a 12 or something.
Oh, you were 12?
Yeah.
But
definitely.
An auteur at that age.
Already maybe. Yeah.
And then where do you go to college?
I went to the New York Film Academy, strangely enough. I did a course here in New
you
York.
You came here?
Yeah, I came here.
When you were how old?
18. And I just wanted to...
What did your parents think about that?
Something like, kids always want to make films, let's send him to New York. Because here, I still remember it, there were guys from the film industry talking about film and making film, and it got me so enthusiastic. And then it was only 2 months, and then I came back to Holland, and I was hired as a television director for the first Big Brother show in Holland. And it turned out I was very good at it. Eh? So it was the first Big Brother in the world. So then John de Mol, the big owner of Big Brother, he thought, you're one of our best directors. So he sent me here. You tell American directors.
Taking the Big Brother program, obviously, which they do quite often, they do with Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
They do all those types of programs and they bring them to other countries and set them up in that country.
Yeah. So I was going well in television, but I always wanted to make films. So then my sister, who was in law school.
She quit law school?
Yes, she did.
Oh my God.
And then we started the Six Entertainment Company and we made 3 films in Holland, Dutch language films.
Now one is the two women are trapped in the department store?
Yes, absolutely.
What's that film
it's
called?
It's like Honeys. It's like a...
Honeys?
Yeah, a children's movie for a little
so
girl.
It's sweet and innocent. Okay,
yeah.
So that's the first film. Honeys.
The second film.
The first one was the one in the gay disco?
Amsterdam in that time. I had a very famous gay scene all over the world.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of friends who were gays and they told me those horrendous stories about pill popping and all the things you do in Amsterdam, but when you're gay,
poppers,
it's wild. So I made a film about that.
Yeah.
And then I moved on to Honeys and then I went on to make I Love Dries. And it's very cool. It's about a famous Dutch singer. He plays himself. And he's abducted by two very fat people who live in a trailer park. And the woman is his biggest fan. She adores this singer. So they abduct him.
So it's like Misery.
Absolutely. But it gets worse. She wants to have his baby. So he
the
has,
natural way.
Yeah. He has to stay in the trailer till she becomes pregnant.
So the husband just isn't capable of reproducing.
Absolutely.
So they have to bring in a stud, so to speak.
Definitely.
And this famous—he's a famous musician.
Singer.
In real life, he's a real singer.
Yes, he is.
He's a handsome guy.
Yeah, definitely.
Is he a good-looking guy?
Yes.
What is his name?
Dries Roefing.
Dries Roefing.
Yes.
At the time you made the movie, how old was he?
He was about 40, I think.
So he still had a little bit of tread on the tire. He wasn't completely out of the business. He was still young enough to know, delight his fans. How do you get him to come and do the movie where he has to sire the child with the morbidly obese woman?
He thought it was for a candid camera show. This is not real. And I said, no, it's real. And he had to think about it for one night.
What was it about him you thought he was game?
He had exactly that guy's, how do you call it? He thinks he's a stud. He does all the training and he's fit. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I thought this would
be a Dionysus.
Extra horrible if he has to make love to this.
And do you see scenes where they're making love?
Definitely.
Oh my God.
Definitely. Yeah.
How long did it take to shoot that movie?
3 weeks.
So three weeks. Yeah. You're shooting that
definitely.
Movie.
Definitely.
And how do you get the money for the film? Like when you're walking into rooms, and we're going to get to this especially with the Centipede series.
Yeah.
How do you get people to give you money?
Yeah.
And then when you get to the distribution part, what do you say to them?
Well, Ilona is a genius at bringing in money. So she rings the whole... We have this famous magazine in Holland, which is called The Quote, and all the rich people are in there. So she just goes through the telephone. 9 of the 10 people, they say, you're an idiot, fuck off. But, like, there's one people that say, no, why not?
But there's one who just can't say no to Ilona.
Absolutely. Then I tell the story and they are hooked.
And they want to be in the film business.
Yes.
Was the film successful?
Yeah, on a Dutch scale. It's a very small country.
Does the film make money?
Yes, but not like your...
I don't expect that because that's... I mean, you and I both know that's Mission Impossible is to
Absolutely.
Make money.
Yeah.
But the... unless you are Mission Impossible, but the...
The investors got their money back.
So you did the first two. So Dries was the third.
The third one, yes.
Right. So you did the first one was called
Gay in Amsterdam.
Gay
in Amsterdam.
You don't really wander too much from the theme itself
when you
give the titles.
Damn.
Gay in Amsterdam. Yes. Honeys.
Honeys. Yes.
Which is loaded with double entendre.
Oh yeah.
And then
I love these.
And then I love Dries.
Love these. Yes.
Which one performed the best at the box office?
Pretty much the same. Yeah, pretty much the same.
They made money.
Yeah, but I liked the third one. I love Dries. The absolutely the best.
That's your favorite.
That's the black humor.
Right.
It's dark. It's getting my way.
Yeah. What were some of the difficulties for you in handling the cast? In other words, you're getting people to do these very compromising. It's one thing to say that someone's going to do a sex scene with a morbidly obese woman, and you're kind of sending up that as horror.
Yeah.
But the actress who was hired to play that part, did you have to be like overly sensitive to how she was treated and how she felt?
Yeah. You have to be charming, always to actors. In situations like that.
And you are charming, let's face it.
Oh, thank you. And the lady, I told her how the scene was going to be, and she trusted me so much. So she said, let's do it. I don't have any fear or whatever, let's do it. And the guy was a little bit hesitant, but I said, come on, Dries, you have to do this. Your fans.
They're not really having sex.
Not really, but it looks
very
real.
I'm going to go home and watch it tonight. After
great.
My wife falls asleep. That's usually what I call a midnight showing in my house.
Okay.
But... It's just such a delight to finally meet you. When are you coming back to New York again?
Likewise.
How long are you here for? Very briefly.
Fly back tomorrow.
When do you come back again?
As soon as possible.
We need to talk about a movie. We need to do a movie together.
Let's do that.
So the movies make money and you reward your investors. They get some kind of, you pay them. They make some kind of a profit.
Yes.
So after Gay in Amsterdam, Honeys, and I Love Dries, what's the next movie?
The first human centipede.
Right, the first human centipede.
Yeah.
And you get the idea from the guy who gets the low sense.
Absolutely.
And where did you do your casting for the film?
Here in New York, because I wanted to have the lead actresses, the two girls who undergo the procedure. Ilona and I went here to New York, and we had like 50 or 60 women coming in.
All young, attractive.
Pretty girls. And I told them the premise and I showed them the drawings I made. And 9 out of 10 said, you're a European crazy idiot.
Yeah.
They were angry at me, even.
Yeah. They didn't know what it was about when they came in.
No.
You kept it under wraps.
Absolutely.
Right.
I said a European horror film.
You said, come in and let me explain it to you first.
Absolutely.
I don't want you to read anything.
On the email,
Ilona's nodding
no manager,
vigorously.
If you do it on the email and you explain it, they won't come. They won't come to the auditions. Eh?
Yeah.
So the smart ones, they stayed. They wanted to hear more. And then you put them on their hands and knees, and a lot of them leave.
Yeah.
They think, oh, no,
that's the next
much.
Round. That's
Absolutely.
The next elimination round.
Yeah.
Then how many remained on their knees and said, okay, let's go further?
We had like 5 left, and we chose 2 in the end.
Right.
2 who were absolutely troopers.
So
you have to be.
Right. So, so they're artists. Okay?
Yeah,
they're
definitely.
Committed to the story.
Oh, yeah, can you imagine?
Right. So they just wanted to work with Dieter. You know,
yes.
Once you showed them Dieter's real, they were like, I want to be in a movie with him.
Definitely.
So now both these women are very pretty and very fit and very kind of sexy
definitely.
Young ladies in the business. And so when you're shooting the film, what's the first day of shooting? Do you ease them into it or do you throw them right into the icy cold water?
No, we slowly started with the car in the forest and stuff, and them getting
the flat tire,
going to the house. So we slowly build up for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was too much. You can imagine.
Yeah, they had to really, really.
Definitely.
Yeah, don't
and we gave them massages when they're on their hands and knees, and we really treated them really well.
What exactly did you have to do hygiene-wise to make everybody comfortable about sticking their face in the butt of the person in front of them?
Yeah, they're a little afraid they didn't fart or something. You have to be very careful with that.
You have to be careful what you eat.
Yeah, they have this very thin latex between their mouths and the butt. So there's something in between, of course, but it's close. It's minimal because otherwise it would look fake.
Yeah.
So they showered very well and they...
And then they would do these things and they were on their hands and knees in the formation of the human centipede for how many hours a day, would you say?
Not very long. It's like we shoot like 10 minutes and then they break.
Take a break for a while.
Yeah, take a break and then we put them back in again.
And how many days were they in the centipede mode?
Almost 4 weeks.
Yeah. On their hands and knees in the centipede mode.
No, that's 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, three weeks of that. That sounds like hell.
Yeah, it's hell.
3 days would be more than I could bear.
It's hell.
When we do our movie together, no more than 3 days of centipede type of physiognomy. Not going to happen. Yeah. So when the time comes to distribute the film,
yes,
you get minimal distribution, correct?
Yeah. IFC did
Who was the exec you dealt with at IFC?
IFC is Jonathan Sebring.
So was Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Yeah. So I know Sebring, wonderful filmmaker, wonderful film executive, brave guy, smart guy.
He loved the film.
He did. He got it. He
absolutely.
He thought it was outrageous and entertaining.
What happened, we showed the first centipede at the Fright Fest.
In London.
Yeah, and it exploded there.
Right.
Really, all the people started talking about it. And then Fantastic Fest in America, they gave us a call. There's in Austin, Texas. And they played it there, and there it exploded again. And then Jonathan came to us. I have to have that film.
And you made some money.
It made money. Yeah, definitely.
You distributed the movie. Now, the movie played in theaters for how long and in what parts of the world? Because it was banned in many places.
Yeah, in Germany it's banned. In England it's cut and stuff. So a lot of places.
The movie
places,
was banned in Germany.
Definitely.
Well, thank God for Dieter's family that they didn't have to be put through that.
And New Zealand, part two is banned. So there's a lot of banning going around.
Right.
But
Where did the film do well? Where's the audience?
America
for
and
the Tom Six movies.
England, America, and Japan. Japan really
crave a good, nasty,
definitely
on all fours horror movie.
And they react very differently. Eh? When they see the film, they cheer. They are so happy.
Like they're cheering a symphony.
And they immediately went on their hands and knees, and they wanted me to play Dieter. And they're crazy, and I love it.
They do these like tributes, like Rocky Horror.
Oh yeah, they do.
They get down to they form human centipede chains outside the theater.
Yeah, and here as well in America. So
it's a cult film.
I saw how David Spade. He made his Halloween costume with Sarah Silverman in the back. I believe I saw pictures of that coming along in America. It's pretty. It's on the Conan O'Brien show. I saw it.
Now. The movie is distributed. What year does Human Centipede come out?
In 2010, it came out.
Not that long ago.
No.
So 2010, it comes out.
Yes.
And you get these scathing reviews. People say you're insane. Yeah. This is disgusting.
Death threats. Lots of death threats.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Lots of them.
Did you need beefed up security in your life after that?
With part two, when we had the premiere in America, we had a guy that took a look. Because we get pictures of guys with guns, and they say you're worse than Satan. We're going to shoot you.
Where was the premiere of Human Centipede in part two in America? Where was that held?
Austin, Texas.
In Austin?
Yes. That was a big event. Pretty cool.
What was the theatrical run? Did it run for a few weeks?
Yeah, a few weeks, definitely.
And then you go on your streaming online.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did you make most of your money? Just so people understand how these things work.
Sure.
When a movie like this, which is very potent and very ugly, torture porn, as you know, is
definitely
a word that's been used to describe a lot of your work.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that in a second.
Sure.
When the movie is gets such a strong reaction, I'm assuming it's in and out of the theater relatively quickly.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're online very quickly.
Yeah, VOD, that works the best.
Imagine. And is that and where DVD. You made your money, VOD?
Yes.
And the movie was success financially.
Oh, definitely.
Right, so which is why you decided to go to the second one.
Yes.
Now, the second one, let's say, I think is a masterpiece. It's a work of art because it's idea that I've never in my life, I'm sitting there going, oh God, no. We're watching the opening scenes. A man who works in a parking garage, who is a lonely, miserable, misshapen, kind of cloven-hooved man, is there watching your original film on his computer and getting the idea that he's going to recreate the movie.
Absolutely.
So in the movie, part two, you summon back the actress.
Yes.
Which of the two actresses was the one that came back?
Aisling Jenny.
She came back because he calls her and says, we're going to go another round. We're going to do the sequel. What was the phone call like for you to call Aisling to come back for round two? Was it easy?
It was very easy. I Skyped with her and she was so overwhelmed with the success of part one. She was a star in her...
In the horror genre.
Yeah, definitely. So I said, Aisling, we have to do part two. And then I told her what it was about and she had to swallow a few times because it's way worse than part one. That's like really a picnic in the park, part one. But she's such a trooper. She said, let's do it. And she never complained. And if you see what happens to her in the film, it's tough.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah. Who's the actress, the kind of crow-like woman that plays Martin's mother?
Vivian Britton. That's in
the... Vivian Britton is the actress's
Britton.
Name.
Yeah, Britton.
Britton, yeah.
A British actress, and I love her. Very old lady.
Yeah,
but,
wonderful role great. She has. Because when he gets out of the bed and his belly sticking out like a globe, and he's in his bed, his moldy bed.
Yeah. Shitting his bed.
And the mother's like, you know, you wonder what's kept the mother from like just poisoning him or just shooting him in his sleep and getting rid of him.
Yeah.
It's all so sad, you know what I mean? Who's your production designer? Who creates the tableau that is Martin's bedroom?
Yeah. I do that myself. Yeah.
We just figured this is how Martin would live.
Yeah, definitely.
Soiled sheets.
Yeah, we go out for a location hunting, and I think this is the place. And then
it's a basement apartment.
Definitely. Yeah.
Some shitty apartment.
Dread and yeah. I love that.
He's popping pimples, and it's all over the bed too. Every kind of body fluid is oozed into the sheets.
I like your mind. I love it.
No, it's just, you can just see it's all there. The thing with your movies is it's all there. Dieter's apartment is very neat and gleaming. It's not some castle with like wet stones and everything. It's like this very gleaming modern edifice. You know what I mean? And when you go down to the laboratory, it's very gleaming and neat and clean. That was your idea, obviously.
Absolutely.
What was the doctor's name in the first film?
Dr. Heiter.
Dr. Heiter.
And that's in a combination of two real Nazi doctors from the Second World
Mengele?
War. It's based on with the twins idea, but it's Dr. Heim and Dr. Richter, and I made it into Heiter.
Heim and Richter become Heiter.
Yes.
What did Heim and Richter do?
They were camp doctors as well.
Okay, but we'll just stop with that. Yeah, we don't want to go too far.
No.
With that. Okay. Key to the darkness in any horror film is the editing. The claustrophobia, the sense that something, someone, is lurking just off camera. Editing can make a mediocre film good and a good film great. One of the best film editors in the business is Martin Scorsese's longtime collaborator, Thelma Schoonmaker.
The thing is, you see, that we create that violence in the editing room. There's no way that De Niro could take an actual punch all the times you see it in the film. Blood and saliva would spray off it, but it's not actually violent. When I get it, I make it violent.
Hear the rest of our conversation in our archive at heresthething.org. When we come back, Human Centipede creator Tom Six explains what he's doing next. Where the Human Centipede trilogy is body horror, Six says his upcoming film deals in pure psychological horror. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. If you watch the first two installments of the Human Centipede series, the first thing you notice is the stark contrast between the two villains. Dieter Laser, the domineering aristocrat, versus the misshapen miscreant Lawrence R. Harvey. Director Tom Six explains.
The difference is that Dieter, he had like a huge career. He did 70 films and he's a big...
Serious actor.
Yeah, stage actor as well.
And what about the actor that played Martin again? What's his name?
Lawrence R. Harvey. Right. He did like very little things.
Yeah. He did like donut commercials.
Yeah, exactly. Very small things.
You mentioned in an interview that I watched where you said you wanted to cast someone who was the opposite of Dieter.
Absolutely, yes.
Dieter, the doctor in the original film, is this gleaming kind of intense genius and he's this very eccentric and even aristocratic figure, and Martin is just like, you know, like somebody expectorated on the ground. He's just a blob of this disease-ridden blob.
Definitely. But that guy, when I saw his appearance, I said he doesn't have to speak in the film. It's just his presence is so strong. While Dieter is very trained in performing with words and
probably done all kinds of great theater. Yeah, very commanding, very powerful. He should play Von Karajan in a film. He looks like he reminded me of Von Karajan. So what did you cut out of the film that you didn't put in that was even... Is there a point where even you sit there and go, we have to lose that, it's just too much?
I put everything in. Everything that comes to my mind and I put in the script is in it.
Shoot it and then you cut it and that's in the film.
Yeah, yeah. So I shoot very economic. So I shoot exactly what I want.
So there's no scene, but there's no scene you shoot where you say, oh my God, Ilona, I have gone too far.
Like in part two, the famous rape scene, and the guy puts the barbed wire around his penis and then rapes his centipede. That's the most gruesome part in the film. And we were shooting that and half of the crew, they went crying and they walked away. And I was like... cheering, fun. Oh, this looks brilliant. It's like a symphony, it's almost.
Eh? Yeah.
And then I looked behind me and all those people were gone.
They left.
They left, yeah.
They couldn't take it.
No.
Wow.
And I
what was it like with the crew? Like, did you feel the crew respected you? And the way, I mean, remember, not all directors are respected.
Yeah.
The movie could be, a love story or a musical comedy or what have you.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter. Not all directors are respected by the crew. Trust me.
Yeah.
But did you find that your crew did respect you?
Definitely.
Or did they all sit there and go, man, like behind your back, are they going, this guy's nuts?
Oh, they probably have said that. But maybe because of the charm, maybe. And because I'm enthusiastic. Eh? I bring them into the story and the adventure. And I tell them, they know exactly what will
it's
happen.
It's contagious, your enthusiasm.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And they stand there, and they see it, and they laugh. For example, part one, we had the scene where the centipede is shitting for the first time. Eh? And he said, feed her.
Yes.
And we filmed that house in a suburban area where other houses were around it. And people were hanging out of their windows looking at those scenes and were horrified. But the crew was laughing. Everybody was laughing.
Yeah.
But you can imagine a situation like that.
Yeah. Well, kind of. I don't know if I can completely. Now, so number three, I have not seen. And do you think I should see it?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, because I was told by everybody that was the weakest of the three.
I don't think so.
No,
it's the strongest, I think.
Because this is where the Coppola analogy goes even further, because obviously there's Godfather 1, then Godfather 2 goes to another level. Then a lot of people thought Godfather 3 was a letdown. Yeah.
It's the best one of all three. It's a satire. I go back to my original punishment idea, and it's for the prisons. So I translate it to a real situation where if you do something horrible, you go to a prison, you're sewn into a human centipede, and according to your sentence, you put in it for a week or maybe 20 years, whatever.
So the centipede thing is the sentence you've been talking about. This is getting back to the original idea
of
child molester.
I think crime rates will drop like pants in a whorehouse because nobody wants to be in a human centipede.
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't think they'd live, actually. I think medically you die if you were being...
No, no. I consulted a real doctor in Holland. And he made the...
He said that if people were to pass their waste product into your mouth and into your bloodstream, into your digestive tract, you would live?
Yeah. If they get vitamin injections and fluids, they could live like that for a long time. Because it's not...
How long?
It's not for a long, long time. If you get the right...
long enough to survive their sentence?
Definitely. Because the feces is not attacked by outside bacteria.
Right. Because it's contained.
Yeah.
It stays in one constant loop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're giving this a lot of thought, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. The doctor helped me he said...
You had gastroenterologists consulting you.
A real surgeon in Holland, who wanted to stay anonymous, but he made this very detailed operation report.
Yeah.
And he was on the set as well, helping.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty cool. That's why
Well, cool is not the word I would come to mind.
Maybe,
no, but for you, I want you to... You're free to say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
How long did that take to shoot?
That was about 6 weeks. Eh? That was our longest shoot because we had like 100 extras.
Extras, yeah. Prison.
A big prison.
And of course, you had a star in the lead role, correct?
Yeah, definitely. Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts. So Eric Roberts is one of the great movie actors of the past several years, and I worked with him once on a film. How do you get Eric Roberts to come and do the third installment?
We had a Skype conversation with him and he loved the first, like you loved the first.
Yeah, he got centipede. It.
He got it. I said, you want to be in part three? And I said, if I don't have to be on my hands and knees.
Right, don't centipede me.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And he did it and he was governor of the state. So his prison is in the...
Is he the one that comes up with the idea of centipeding everybody?
No, that's the accountant of the warden. comes
and
up
who
with
plays
idea.
That part?
That's Lawrence R. Harvey. I brought back.
Oh, Lawrence R. Harvey came back.
Yeah.
Oh, then I got to see this just because I'm such
Dieter
a Lawrence
well,
R. Harvey fan. And Dieter's in it.
Warden.
Dieter's the warden, and Lawrence R. Harvey is his assistant?
Yeah.
That's like getting Marlon Brando and De Niro to be in part three together.
That's true. In totally different roles.
In totally different roles.
Yes.
And Eric plays the governor
of the state. Yeah.
And what's his arc? What's his story in
that prison is really cost inefficient. So he's looking
for solutions.
Yeah, he threatens to shut the place down, and
figure it out.
Absolutely.
And they come up with an idea under pressure.
And they built the centipede system, which is very cost effective.
They don't defeat anybody.
And then the governor comes in, and he says, this will be the death penalty for you. But in the end, he understands the situation, and then he says, this is exactly what America needs.
Yeah.
Like that system.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you should check it out if you want. I think it's the best one.
Did you have to pay Robert some real money to do the movie?
I can't imagine
he's cheap.
It's not like Hollywood money because
right,
you're
it's
small.
Not millions of dollars, but he had to get paid a decent salary.
Because
those guys don't come cheap.
Definitely.
Right. Now, so you and I connect on Skype with your sister.
Yes.
Now, is she really your sister, or you say she's your sister?
No, she's really my sister.
And she's really like your co-producer, and you say she's your sister, just to further ingratiate yourself with people.
No.
Like she's my sister, so that kind of makes it like a little family business.
Yeah. It is a family business, 100%.
Yes. She's literally your sister.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I take your word for it.
Yes.
When you and I hook up on Skype, I reach out to you.
Yeah.
I say, Mike, I just got to talk to this guy.
Yeah.
You say to me, Alec, we're going to have a group of people who are like a league of extraordinary villains. You know, they're all people who are dedicated. They love human suffering.
Yes.
The original concept for Onania Club, they were all wealthy so they could fly to Mexico if there's an earthquake and see death and destruction and people dying and suffering.
Yes.
And then you say to me, I want you, Alec, to play a oncologist.
Yes.
But
yes.
rather than curing the cancer, you are giving people more cancer.
Yes.
And to tear a page out of your own life, we're going to have your wife be much younger than you, very beautiful, very fit, and you are giving your wife the cancer. You're killing your wife.
Yes.
So I'm sitting there, and I tell my wife this, and my wife like literally looks at me. If you saw the look on my wife's face, she was like, the whole dream of me working with you just died in that one look. It was
the look of your wife.
My wife just looked at me like, that's never going to happen. You are never to be within 50 miles of this guy. He sounds like a complete, total nutbag. Yeah. And I don't even want that energy on you when you come home from work.
Yeah.
So I go, no, you should see him. He's very charming and very ebullient. And she says, no, you can't do the movie. So then we talk and you say, okay, Alex, so here's another idea. One of the people in the film is going to steal the corpses of celebrities.
Yeah.
So I want you to come and shoot for one day and you're going to play yourself dead in the casket. And the woman is like casing out the joint to figure out the width of the door frame, how she's going to get the body out of there.
Exactly.
And you play yourself dead. And I thought, fantastic. And then I couldn't even make that day work.
Yeah.
Is all that still in the movie?
It's all in the movie.
So the League of Extraordinary Villains, Onania Club, is men and women.
I changed it to all women now.
It's all women.
All women, yes.
Okay.
And that's even scarier.
Yes.
Because when women, who masturbate on the misery of other people and enjoy
it. They masturbate to suffering.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the worst human emotion. It's Schadenfreude.
Yes.
Which happens in real life as well.
Yeah.
But in the film.
Well, in America in 2018, we're very familiar with that.
Yeah, definitely. But it's dark and powerful as
Have you redefined evil?
Yeah. I think,
so.
I think so, yeah.
How many of the women are in the league? How many actresses did you have to get?
Five.
There's
five women.
And where are they from, American?
They're American actresses.
Anybody we would know?
No big names, no.
Who's the most well-known one?
Jessica Morris is maybe the...
Jessica Morris is her name.
She does series on television and stuff. And
was it difficult for you to entice people to come do this movie
with you? This was very... You can imagine, because like you, I told them the story... And so many were offended.
Yeah. 80% leave the room.
Yeah, yeah, almost the same.
Yeah.
And the smart ones, they stay and they want to listen more.
I love you.
Yeah, thank you.
I love you. The people who understand who are the smart ones, they stay.
Yeah.
That's the name of your biography.
I hope so.
It's an analogy for the film, going audience, and everyone who works with you. The smart ones, they stay.
Yeah.
So 80% of them aren't so smart, and you shoot for how many weeks?
We shot almost a month again.
A
little bit the same.
Yeah. Where?
In the Hollywood Hills, we had this beautiful villa.
What was the budget of the film?
What was it? I am not allowed to talk about money, but she is the money girl.
It's a secret. Well, we won't say anything, but we'll hold up some fingers just so I can have an idea.
Yeah.
This much?
I won't tell.
You can't?
No, I can't.
Okay. how,
yeah.
how international woman of mystery
yeah.
is. Yeah. But you shoot in L.A., no union issues.
No, it's all non-union.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we,
but
definitely.
You never had any of the unions come and bother you. Because
no.
they know your name.
Yep.
They know who you are. If they see and they monitor these things,
yeah.
Yeah. there's a casting call,
yeah.
and you've got American actress going to do a film, yeah. SAG doesn't show up and hassle you?
No, because the actresses also work non-union. So they right. specifically...
They were not in the union?
Half. They are... Yeah. Some are, how do you call it, FICOR. Eh? They can do non-union...
Outside the unit,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
They can do some non-union,
some
percentage of
exactly.
their work.
Yeah.
Now, are you glad to get away from the Centipede thing? Now, that's done.
Yeah, that's done. I
There's
made
no more
films?
Centipede 4.
No. Never, ever will I make...
Your sister's looking like, well, that's not...
Yeah, well...
Not so fast,
yeah,
my
not
boy.
So fast, no. But I have so many more ideas. My head is exploding. So the Onania Club is so very new, fresh, original. That's what I like, and that's where I go for. When she saw the last cut I did, she was overwhelmed with how powerful it was. Eh? It's evil. It's really evil.
When you're watching a movie like Frankenstein,
yes,
there's some moments of humanity, if you
yeah.
will, or decency
yeah.
in the world itself.
Definitely.
And in your movies, there's none.
Now, like Martin has some humanity, don't you think? Because he was abused as a kid. He has some, you pity him
right.
almost. The audience feels for him. Not everybody. And there's a lot of black humor in my films. A lot of people
yeah.
see that, not all of them.
Right. Does the Onania Club have any moments of decency and
yeah, definitely.
Humanity?
It's humanity. Otherwise, it won't work, I think.
Right.
It's balances between humanity, real evil, and also dark humor. Not everybody sees
right.
it.
Right.
But it's a difficult road to walk on, eh?
If right.
for an audience, I think.
Yeah.
It's like Sex in the City, but then on evil steroids. It's evil.
It's Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Right.
The five women, but now it's...
Well, there was four in Sex in the City.
Yeah okay.
So you've added one. It's a bonus.
Yeah a bonus.
The Sex in the City plus one.
Yeah. She enters the group, the fifth one.
Yeah, you bring in...
Yeah, in the film. Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's a wonderful setup for maybe a political thriller you could do, where the doctor is someone who you go to cure cancer, and they're only giving you more cancer. That reminds me of certain political figures in this country today, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And when they don't have cancer, she just tells them they have cancer, just to witness their misery.
Oh, she
lies. Also,
there's
a scene in that as well. And she's lesbian now in the film. She has this beautiful girlfriend who is this smoothie-drinking, very healthy girl.
Healthy.
And she hates that. She looks at the woman and thinks...
She wants to destroy everything healthy.
Definitely. And the moment she gets sick, their sex life goes through the roof, you can imagine.
Yeah. What's your next movie?
I have two lined up, and I can't tell about.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but
are they evil films as well?
Yeah, they're evil. Yeah,
I told you my idea for my horror film.
Yeah, you did.
It might not be your genre, though. It might not be evil enough.
No.
I mean, I have a great idea. I think it's a great idea, my idea. Everybody loves it, but nobody wants to make it.
Oh.
Where's my Ilona?
Yeah,
need an Ilona.
yeah. I would love to work with you.
Stay tuned. I might eventually redefine evil. Alongside my guest, Human Centipede creator Tom Six. His upcoming film is called The Onania Club, out early 2019. This is Alec Baldwin. Here's the Thing is a production of WNYC Studios.